Hello, everybody, and welcome to In the Doll World, a show spotlighting the passion and the people of the doll community. With your host, Georgette Taylor, former vice president and co-founder of Big Beautiful Dolls, and Tammy Fisher, owner of Curiosity Teach Dolls and Collectibles. Join us as we talk to and feature fascinating new dolls and doll artists, from avid collectors to repainters, redesigners, and all the people in between as they share their journeys, give us glimpses into their processes and what propels their passion and drive that help to keep your doll world moving and shaking. Here are your hosts, Georgette and Tammy. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on In the Doll World. My name is Tammy Fisher, and I'm with my beautiful co-host, Miss Georgette Taylor.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Miss Georgette. And today we have a special guest for you. We have one of the big names in the fashion doll industry. Somebody, I'm sure you guys are going to be fan dolling like I am. We've got Mr. Robert Tonner today.
Hey.
Yay.
Great to be here.
Oh, great. It's great to have you. Yeah, it's really great to have you. Got lots to talk about because your career is just so vast and
long.
Your dolls. Yeah.
Long.
Yeah. Is that a good long career?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
It's good to be able to make a living doing what you have a passion for.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to start at the beginning. Tell us about how you fell in love with dolls. How did this journey begin?
Oh, boy. How many hours do we have?
We have a few. It's all right.
That's right. We can always do another show.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember as I grew up in Indiana, in a small town in Indiana. And, you know, it was very, Indiana has very practical sort of down to earth people, especially at that time and where I grew up. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of glamour, but I was a bedazzled little boy, you know, very young. And, you know, so the glamour I got exposed to was, you know, seeing those dolls up on the shelves in a toy store. And, you know, that there's something that, you know, I developed an interest in very young, you know, looking at the dolls.
Which dolls were you seeing in the store?
We had a couple of dime stores back then.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, at Christmas time, the hardware store would have toys. It wasn't, you know, it was a small town. So, you know, there wasn't a lot to look at or choose from. So I went to the dime store and Madame Alexander, they didn't have those and stuff like that. So it was more commercially produced dolls. But I think what I remember most are these like bride dolls in trunk sets.
Okay.
High up on the shelves. They were the expensive ones at $12.95 or whatever. So anyway, that was a long time ago. So, you know, kind of fast forward, I have a younger sister who always got dolls and I always thought they were cool. And then Barbie came on the scene and that really got me going. So as an interest, you know, outside looking in.
Right, yes. Right. Like, yes. You didn't purchase any and were playing with them at the time. You were just
a little boy in mm-hmm. Bluffton, Indiana, you don't play with dolls.
Right.
Okay.
Or at least out in the open.
You know?
And at least at that time. I think thankfully things have changed.
Yeah, yes. Somewhat. Yes, they have.
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I kind of, you know, grew up and all that kind of stuff and went through high school and then got into college and I became interested in fashion and fashion illustration. So I eventually ended up, believe it or not, I was pre-med for a couple of years in college.
Wow. Oh.
Did not know that.
Yeah,
that was never going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah, never going to happen. So I went to New York City one summer and I, you know, there was no internet back then. So I was walking on, you know, just touring the city and I see Parsons School of Design. And it turns out it was a fashion design school. And I didn't even know there was such a thing. So I thought, oh, I can maybe take illustration classes. And there turns out there was a summer session that summer. I went in the spring and that summer there was a summer session for 6 weeks. So I signed up, I got in, and I got a scholarship. That's the fast version of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool. And I was thrilled about that. And I thought I would study fashion illustration, which is what I felt my interest was. Turns out the fashion illustration, the classes were closed. They put me in fashion design.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was kind of a cool thing. So I learned a lot and actually became a fashion designer. So I worked on 7th Avenue in fashion for about 15 years.
Okay.
So that was kind of cool. But in the meantime, I started sculpting as a hobby. And that's what really, things really started to come together then as far as the dolls go.
Mm-hmm. Kind of the love that you have for like just admiring dolls morphed into the sculpting part of what you were doing.
Yeah. Here's a, you know, kind of interesting, may not be, but whatever. It's my brothers, as I have a twin brother and an older brother. Mm-hmm. And when I was in, I think I was in college or right out of college, or Parsons, they gave me this Barbie collectible book as a joke.
Oh.
Right. Yeah. It was the first Barbie book that came out for collecting. And you know, I said, what is this? And then, you know, I started looking at it and forget it.
Wow.
And I had to start collecting. Yeah. So I became more and more aware of the doll world. That's kind of the fast version.
So the joke is really on them, really.
Yeah.
When did you first sculpt your, I guess, the doll that you wanted to manufacture? How did that come about for you?
Well, that's an interesting question. I always had in my mind the kind of dolls I wanted to do. And I, you know, I loved the Barbie idea and fashion, you know, the fashion illustration and sculpting. It was kind of a Barbie sort of thing. And I always loved what Mattel did early on and, you know, how well done it was. And I wanted to do my own version. You know, that was kind of what I had in mind. But I didn't want to do it until I could do it properly. So, I mean, to start, I had to start this business. I left fashion design, a very lucrative business at the time for me, to start this business where I had no income, no nothing. So I was, you know, taking a big risk, and a very supportive spouse. So that was good. But, you know, I started in my garage and started, you know, I knew I could start the business because I taught myself porcelain making, mold making and casting and firing. Wow. So I thought, oh, now I can make the dolls and I can sew the outfits and I can get the wigs. So I'm good. I can start a doll business. And that's basically how I started. Never doing the fashion doll that I wanted to do because I didn't feel like I could do it yet. Because I couldn't do plastics and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. I see. Oh, interesting.
I didn't have the exposure to the industry. You know, I didn't come up through the industry. I was kind of doing it as an outsider. And, you know, I didn't know how to get things made. I mean, there was no internet. So
that
slowed me down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, well, how did that come about then, though? How were you able to get into that space?
So, you know, I started making these, you know, very small edition dolls and, no, wait, I'm lying to you. Sorry about that.
you're just forgetting. That's all.
When I left fashion design, I thought, you know, I need some sort of plan and how to turn this into a business. And Toy Fair was the thing. And I paid for a booth at Toy Fair. And very small little booth. And I took my fashion doll in porcelain. I did have a fashion doll in porcelain. And I had a little girl doll. Mm-hmm. Fashion doll in porcelain was so expensive and so hard to make and all that. I did sell them, but the little girl dolls just took off. And at that time, I was making everything in my studio and almost making everything myself. But that's how I got started. So, you know, then, you know, as I got to know more and as I researched more, I started to figure out, you know, how to get things manufactured and then also realized that I couldn't do it all myself. There wasn't enough time in the day and I didn't like doing it all myself. I like doing the first one, not everyone, you know.
Right. That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting story. So you said you were selling little girl dolls. So how did you go from this person who was successfully selling little girl dolls to become a person who's selling these adult fashion dolls?
Well, the little girl doll, there were a few things about the little girl dolls that, and this is going to sound weird, but a few things that worked with little girl dolls with the way I had to produce. First of all, shoes. You know, high heel shoes were almost impossible for me to make at the time.
Oh, okay.
But I could make flat-soled shoes. And at the time, you really couldn't have a fashion doll unless you had high heels.
Right.
Okay.
And there were other things like that, that, you know, and the accessories and all that. Now, so the next big step, so this was all porcelain, and the porcelains were really taking off and doing really well. So I was growing a lot every year. Mm-hmm. And a good friend of mine, wonderful doll maker, Helen Kish.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I asked her, you know, we had been friends, and I asked her, you know, she had started doing vinyl things in America. And I said, can you help me? And she was wonderful about it. She gave me any question I asked, she would answer. And I always remember that. It's like, you know, she knew how to give back. She understood that play it forward, definitely. Mm. But anyway, so I started making vinyls. And so I tried a fashion doll on vinyl. And that I called that the American model. And I think that was in the mid-90s. Yeah, it was in the mid-90s. It's like 95. So that's kind of, so I started that way, but it still wasn't the doll I wanted to make. I wanted to make hard plastic, you know, injection plastic dolls,
right,
kind of move and all this kind of stuff. That the first doll I made was all vinyl, and she was kind of, you know, very simply jointed and all that.
Okay. So you were doing the porcelain little girls, then you went to the vinyl American model.
American model.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then what happened? I know you weren't doing what you wanted to do. So what happened that allowed you to move to your next step?
Yeah. So I kind of discovered the world of licensing during that period. Because when I was doing the porcelain little girl dolls, you know, if I'd name somebody Susie or Karen or something like that, you know, some doll or Heather or whatever. And if the clothes were cute and the doll was cute, they would sell. But when I did an Alice in Wonderland, within under 5 minutes, we sold 50 pieces of a $650 doll at Toy Fair as soon as they opened, because it was Alice in Wonderland. Everybody knew it. So I figured,
oh, you know,
licensing is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, recognizable names.
That makes sense.
License, because I didn't have to license else. So the first license I went after was Little Orphan Annie.
Okay.
Because there had been dolls, but it was a very famous name, and she's an iconic character. There had been dolls, but they'd been a disaster. In fact, I think the last company that put out a nanny doll went under. I think it had to do with the movie and all that kind of stuff. It
was, mm-hmm.
But I figured if you know, handled it right and all that. So I begged them for the license. I got it, you know, as a company that I was the only company looking at it. So
right.
I'm happy to get it out there. And, you know, we sold right through the Annie dolls. So that was good. And it gave me something for my portfolio. The next thing I did, and this was, you know, I'm seeing my future, but it was I went to DC Comics, believe it or not. And I told them I wanted to make Superman dolls. And they said no. And I said, but I want to do porcelain Superman dolls that will retail for $500. And that got their interest up. So,
really?
Yeah. So that didn't compete with anybody, and they could, you know, $500 porcelain Superman. That's pretty cool. So
yes.
I did a Superman and Lois Lane. But then you see what I was doing was I was building my portfolio.
Yes.
Life. That was the point. Besides, I love doing this stuff, but that was the point. And then the big one was Betsy McCall. Now, this is how I got into the really mass manufacturing. I did an all vinyl Betsy McCall. Now, Betsy McCall was a paper doll, for people who don't know, was a paper doll that ran from the early 50s through the 80s in McCall's magazine. And for you young listeners, a magazine is a bunch of papers stacked together with a cover, front and back cover. Just
love
so they know. Right. Just so they know. So in this magazine was, you know, every month they published a paper doll. So anyway, so I got the license for that. And again, no one had been interested in that license. And a guy from Taiwan stopped me at Toy Fair and said, let me produce these dolls for you. And I said, no, but, you know, because I was afraid. I didn't know how to, you know, let go of the product that we were making where I had control over everything. The problem with making in the United States was that it was horribly expensive.
Yes.
Horribly expensive. Anyway, I sent him a doll and he priced it out. And what we were paying for the raw bodies, and I mean an unpainted, unwigged, but was more than he quoted me for the entire doll, box dressed, painted with eyes, with a wig, ready to ship.
Okay.
Whoa, so, that's a, yeah, it's a big difference.
So I felt like I had to, you know, I had to try it. So we tried it with Betsy McCall and I was able to sell, you know, my prices went from, you know, $300 to $600 a doll to $75. And all of a sudden I'm, you know, I'm competitive and I can, you know, I can get my dolls out to the collectors. Because you don't have to be rich to buy, you know, you don't have to be rich to buy the dolls. So, and Betsy sold like crazy. So that's really one of the first huge steps I made.
Okay. And then that kind of gave you the, I guess it gave you the opportunity then to create a different type of fashion doll from that.
Yeah, it did. Mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons, it was, you know, we had money coming in then.
Right. That helped.
Yeah, which really helped. And I had, you know, my guy from Taiwan could do anything. He could get anything made. And that's when I knew I could get it done.
So I have a question for you, though. You were talking about Betsy McCall. So Betsy looks a lot like Trixie. So did you do those dolls, Trixie and Patsy? Did you do all of those dolls around the same time? Georgia and Betsy and Trixie and
no,
Patsy?
No, they were spread over. Well, yeah, Betsy was mid-90s, and then the Mary Engelbreit dolls were, they came out in 2000.
Okay.
And that's who would that be, Georgia, and, you know, Mary Engelbreit, and Anastel, and those dolls.
Okay.
And then the Patsy Trixie things came out, I think, yeah, they came out like a good 10 years after that.
Okay.
But they all have the same dad, so it's...
So all your children look the same.
Yeah. Yeah, people say that, you know, doll artists, dolls look like them. You know, it's a good thing I'm so damn cute, right?
I know, oh, right? Definitely. Yes, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't underestimate that, Robert.
you could be putting out dolls that look like the werewolf or something. So yeah, be happy that you're cute.
Yeah.
That's funny. So you said found somebody had found you, and because you had that connection in Taiwan, you were able to then create more dolls because you understood the process then, and you also had that connection.
Well, you know, as a long time like studier. I studied doll history, and I did from, you know, the time I started really looking into dolls and doll collecting and making dolls. I mean, I studied, you know, and history was, and I knew how dolls were made. I knew that I needed to do the doll I wanted to do. It had to be injected molded. Mm. Now, if you don't know, the, you know, vinyl molding for a plastic doll is a little expensive to get into, but not horrible. You know, it's like it could be $1,000, you know, a couple of $1,000s to get into at the time, to get the molds done. And then you pay for the doll, of course. But I costed molds in the United States for an injection molded 8-inch doll. So when a customer asked me to do something that was the same size as an Alexander doll, and those molds at the time were $60,000. To do injection molded dolls. So I couldn't do them here.
Wow.
It was much cheaper, much, much cheaper. So that was another reason why when we went to Taiwan and China, that's one of the reasons that I could afford to do it. The prices were. But I knew the processes and what I would need to do to make the dolls.
Mm-hmm. What was the cost difference then? Like, what was, you know, was it like $20,000 less? Was it, what was the cost difference?
I'd say $40,000,
$45,000
less. Wow. Again, major differences.
Yes, that is.
That's
like three times as expensive to do it in the U.S.
Yeah, or more. It was almost more, like four times.
Wow.
Yeah. But now that was a long time ago. China is much more expensive
now. Now, right? Yes.
Oh yeah, much more expensive. Now I wouldn't make as many molds or whatever. We couldn't really do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you started making your new doll, your first, I guess she would be more mass market, right, for you? Was that Tyler?
Yeah, and. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not really mass because I see that as toy line, but it is
okay.
It's more mass collectible,
right? Okay.
Because it was affordable. Our first Tyler Basics, I believe, and we did them in a bathing suit or something, and I think they were $40 retail.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
how did you come up with her name? I'm always curious how people come.
Well, let me give you, I'll get into this doll history stuff a little bit. I had this doll in mind. I had done this American model in the 90s, and I wanted to come up with my plastic one now that I knew I could do it, and I had the resources and the person to do it. So I wanted to do my plastic doll. But as I'm developing it and coming up with the name, you know, thinking about this, Mel Odom, very talented guy, came out with Jean Doll.
Right.
And that kind of like, oh, there's my doll.
I mean, don't you hate that? That's happened to me.
Yes, but I also, you know, I loved what he did. I thought, he walked away from that 12-inch Barbie sort of thing. He just didn't turn his back on it. And he developed his own market. He made his own market. But one of the things that I was very conscious of was, you know, American Girl had come out by then, and it was all the storybooks, you know, not that that's a new thing. And, you know, Raggedy Ann and Andy had storybooks, you know, a million years ago. But American Girl had the storylines to go along with the doll. Mel had that whole wonderful, you know, star, movie star stories. So I thought, This I can't come out with a doll that's a fashion model. That just won't cut it these days. It's, you know, the collectors want something more.
Right.
You know, they want a more, you know, in-depth sort of entertaining story, or not so cut and dry. Anyway, so as strange as this may sound, at the time, making her a fashion designer, making Tyler a fashion designer, seemed to be kind of revolutionary in the doll world. So that's what I did. I made her a fashion designer. And I also put her, I always knew she was going to be modern because that's what I, you know, so I put her in today and I put her in today's clothes. I also did my own proportion. I tried to do my own, definitely tried to do my own look because I didn't want, I had a lot of respect, still do have a lot of respect for Mel and what he did, and didn't want to, you know, step on that. But I thought that, you know, at the time, the doll world was expanding, was opening up in a huge way. And I thought there would be room for everybody.
Right, right.
Yes. Yeah. So after you did Tyler, so what happened there? What was your next move?
Well, that was some year. We introduced Tyler Wentworth and we introduced Mary Engelbreit's Anna Stell all at once. And it was the biggest year I ever had. It was unbelievable, the orders we took and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of really just, you know, my company kind of exploded then. So it was great. It was great. So my next move, what do I do next? You know, Tyler, I kept building on the personalities and the characters in the line. And at the same time, I was still looking at licensing. And that was when licensing got very interesting with the Harry Potter line. Now, that's a story, too.
Go ahead. We got your time.
So I read the first Harry Potter book, loved it, and I heard they were making a movie. So I called Warner Brothers, who I had a little bit of a relationship with through licensing. And, you know, they knew we were a small company and all this. But, you know, I asked them, I said, I want Harry Potter. And they said, no way. Mattel has Harry Potter. Well, you know, you'll never get Harry Potter. Mattel has Harry Potter, and that's, you know, and I was, oh, okay. I saw the Mattel product, and I wasn't you know, the first go around for them, I wasn't impressed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love Mattel. I think that they're an incredible company, but I wasn't impressed with that product. So they had it a couple of years, and I noticed that they had dropped the line. So I went running back to Warner Brothers. I want Harry Potter. I want Harry Potter. And they said, oh, no. Again. And I'm like, oh. So I go to Toy Fair that year, and who has Harry Potter but Madame Alexander?
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. So they had done a few samples, and I thought they were interesting because they did Harry Potter based off of the book cover illustrations.
Right. Okay.
And I wanted to do the movie characters.
Okay.
So Madame Alexander dropped the license because they didn't get enough sales at Toy Fair. Or I'm assuming that, but that's right. What I heard through the grapevine. So I went back and I said, please just let me try. And so they let me do it. So they let me do it. And so we had Harry Potter for the next 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible. We were the only company in the world to do Harry Potter dolls for a good 5 years while those movies were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty huge for us.
They were great dolls too. They looked very much like the characters.
Thank you. Really nice job
with those dolls.
Thank you. Yeah, and they were really high quality. That's when we were, you know, really singing with our factory and really, you know, we were able to do accessories and trunks and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
really cool. Yeah, it was a great time to be in the doll business.
Yeah, you've done some amazing characters, you know, some great licensing agreements with people. I love that. Which character did you have more the most fun creating though? I know they're all special, Robert.
Yeah.
All your children.
Your children. Right, you don't want to be like that. That's my favorite child. But, no, but seriously, there's always one character that you have much more, you know, fun creating for yourself.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's like, that's really hard to answer. It's like, I mean, I love working on the Harry Potter thing. That was a major production.
Right.
But there were other ones I really liked too. It's like Laura Croft. We did.
Yes, I was going to say Laura. Did you like the Jessica Rabbit one?
Love doing that. That was so much fun. So much fun. I did Snoopy and Belle for Peanuts for a special thing promotion that they were doing. And I loved doing that. That was fun. Yeah, it's like sculpting challenges.
Right. Yes. Yes.
I was going to say, well, you know, the one that's most loved in my house is that the green Wicket doll. Yeah, my daughter has a chronic pain condition and she was in a wheelchair, and we were talking to people at the doll pages and saying, you know, I was saying that her playing with dolls was helpful for her. And so we asked people if we could buy dolls from them for a lesser price, you know, because they weren't using them anymore. We wanted used dolls. She's just a little kid. You know, do you have some dolls that we can buy for, from you? And people started sending her dolls.
Oh,
and wonderful. Yeah. And one of the dolls that was sent to her was your green Wicket doll. And my daughter immediately it was like magic. She just mm-hmm. fell in love with this doll. And so this became like her favorite doll. And
wow.
Yeah. And so it was funny because she came in, like, whoever had the doll before it was, had taken, gotten rid of her original costume. So she had like this kind of made up kind of outfit. It was like someone who was early into sewing kind of right. outfit. But my daughter just loved this doll. So we went to see Wicked. It came to town. My children are biracial. And the person who was playing Elphaba was biracial.
Oh,
it was
cool.
Emmy Raver Lampman. And so we go and we wait at the end of the show. And, you know, my daughter's so excited. So she's, you know, she's out of her wheelchair and, you know, she's standing there and she's really excited. And Emmy comes out and she signs the doll. And she asks my daughter, do you want me to sign it as Emmy or as Elphaba? And she said she wanted it signed as Emmy. But when my daughter saw her, and this goes back to how important it is to have representation. My daughter said to me, she says, Mommy, she looks like Sissy. And she says, Mommy, she looks like me. So this green Elphaba doll that really doesn't look like Emmy becomes part of my daughter's representation of herself because of that link with Emmy. Mm. So it was a really powerful time for us. Oh, really powerful.
Great story. Jeez.
Yeah. Beautiful story. I could
be a part of that in a small way.
It's just, she loved, I mean, she would take that doll places and then, you know, she cosplays Elphaba. And so for a while, when she was doing her cosplaying as Elphaba, she would take her with her. And then she says, no, this doll is too important to me. I don't want to get her broken or anything like that. But my daughter is in love with that doll.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's so cool, right? Yeah. Sometimes you just don't realize the impact. People share stories with you, but then there's times when you really think about, wow, I really made an impact. You know what I mean? I'm not just doing what I love. You people are really appreciating what I do. You know,
well, and you know what, that's one of the reasons why, you know, as a doll collector and a doll maker, all this, you know, people who aren't don't understand how powerful it can be to have, that what a doll can do for certain people.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it depends on your situation or whatever, but I think it's a wonderful hobby.
Yeah, it really
is.
Yes,
it is.
It really is. It's you know, part of that, I think when we created the plus size dolls, I'm sure like when you created Emmy, was that we wanted representation for all people. You know, it didn't make a difference what color you were, what size you were, you know, it just needed to be represented because there were people out there that weren't being represented in the fashion doll world. And we have so many more dolls now that represent so many types of people and groups, you know, that it's refreshing, you know, that we have people who are doing dolls with vitiligo, you know, things like that. That's saying, hey, you're just as beautiful. Does it make a difference? You know, and I think being a doll designer really helps you to create those statements for people.
Absolutely.
And you've done an amazing job just with all the different types of dolls that you've done and all the licensing and creating. I'm sure when you created Tyler as a fashion designer, like you said, nobody really thought about that. Never thought about a doll can be a fashion designer and then have a fashion line. I think I did get to see you. Did you do a fashion show with your with all your dolls?
Yeah, Tyler. Thanks.
It was so beautiful.
Yeah, it was a publicity thing. That's when Toy Fair for doll makers was huge. So that would be our big show for the year. So I would do the Tyler line. We'd make the clothing full size for models.
Yep.
And then we'd have a runway show like Tyler. We'd have somebody play Tyler and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the silly stuff. But it was really fun.
No, it was great because I never saw anything like that before. Yeah. It was just amazing to attend and to see that. I thought that was so brilliant. I really did.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
That was. So now you are I heard that you have closed your company. What's that about?
What the heck's going on there?
What the heck is going on there?
And what the heck am I doing?
Yes.
Yeah, I did. It was, you know, I was going on 30 years of it. And, you know, it got to be tough. It got to be a really tough business. The prices, you know, and most of it had to do with production. In fact, it all kind of had to do with production. Mm-hmm. You know, we got into this cycle of I had to make more and more and more to keep for the overhead and all this. And, you know, I love the people that I worked with. I had some great, great people. The roller coaster that you get on, the merry-go-round, what is it? Whatever, some machine that you get on and can't get off. You know, I had to keep producing tons and tons of dolls to keep the overhead. So we got to the point where we just couldn't handle it. And I tried different ways to change the business and to make it bigger or smaller. You know, one of the ways to make it, you know, to make it work for us, and it just wasn't. So I figured at a certain point, I thought it was just about time. I lost a couple of good people, pattern makers and stuff like that, because of, you know, they aged out or they went on to something else. And I thought, yeah, it's time. So I never wanted to leave the doll business. But I really haven't. Although it may seem like I have, I really, believe me, I'm still in it.
you closed down your company, and then you, was that Finn and Arrow? Was that when that happened?
Well, no, Finn and Arrow was, I had a business reason for doing Finn and Arrow, because we were looking at doing a couple of other sort of things, not just collectible dolls and the collectible. Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of fell through, but we had the company. So, Finn and Arrow. But we had F&B Doll Company. I had Nancy Ann Storybook Doll Company, Tonner, Wild Imagination, and Finn and Arrow. So we shut them all down.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it sounds sad. It really wasn't that sad. You know, I was ready.
Right. Yeah. 30 years is a long time, you know, to be doing that business. So,
yeah. I am going to be announcing a collaboration with, and already said too much. I'm going to be announcing something that I'm very excited about. And
okay.
There's going to be a lot more dolls coming.
Nice.
Cool. So when are your dolls going to start coming out?
Probably by the end of the year.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a long time in coming. I've been working on it for a while. It's still is kind of like working my way through it. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. But we're about ready to launch.
Oh, cool. Very good. Yeah, we would love that. That would be great if you feel to come back and share that.
Yes.
So you are doing something with 3D now. And how does that work, and how is that working for you?
Well, I'm assuming you mean my digital sculpting and all
that. Yes, the digital sculpting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And 3D printing.
And 3D printing. So, and I haven't done as much 3D printing as I would like. But here's what I started. I started sculpting digitally about 10 years ago, and probably about 6 or 7 years ago, that was, I don't use clay anymore. I just sculpt digitally.
Oh. So
I keep taking classes and learning more and more and more. And it's, I'm old, so it takes me a while to learn these things. But I love this thing. I love the digital sculpting.
Okay, good. I was going to ask you because that's a very different type of a way of doing things, because when you're doing clay, it's your hands are there. Mm-hmm. It's very, very physical, and, there's a smell of clay. So, if you're doing it digital, it takes away all of those senses that you have. So,
yeah,
it's interesting.
You know, all that smell of clay and all that, never liked that.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
Hallelujah, it took away the smell.
Never really liked that. I have to tell you, I'm a lazy artist. I got to tell you, and I hated cleaning up. I'd sculpt,
and
then I'd have to clean it up, and I'd clean up my tools and stuff like this, or not. I usually just close the room to the studio. Here's a couple of things that works so well with digital is that one of the things that a clay sculptor has to do is has to make a face symmetrical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it took me years to learn how to do that. And I kind of did, but I always struggled with it. But with 3D sculpting, it's automatically done. So you don't have to do it. You can focus on other things. I can get the expression. I don't ruin it by doing this or that. So that's pretty cool. I also don't have to worry about the size of the sculpt. Before, when I was sculpting in clay, if I got the size wrong in the clay, you'd have to re-sculpt the whole thing. There was no way to shrink it. Shrinking wasn't as much of a problem as growing something, making it bigger. So with the digital sculpt, you just plug in the numbers and it'll pop out, however, whatever size you want.
Less labor intensive, I would assume, for sure.
Yes.
It allows me to focus on the stuff that I really like. It's not the mm-hmm. physical part about, I'm really focusing on the sculpt.
That makes sense. Yeah. And it would be easier too, because once you have a body, you have that template there, you can say, I want this to be taller and, pull it up or, make it thinner or wider. That saves you a lot of time to, to be able to do it like that. That's smart.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's so much fun. And I'm taking classes from a bunch of kids.
Yes.
Very talented kids. The talent out there is unbelievable.
Yes, that's true.
It's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's great, though. It's just another phase of you, showcasing the work that you can do, just a different platform. So that's great. That's great, though, that you're still learning how to do that, how to create dolls in a different platform. So
I'm going to try as long as I can still keep learning. Yeah,
I know. I know that's right, Robert. That's a good thing.
Yeah,
we would wish all people would think that way. That's wonderful.
As far as the 3D printing goes, I work with a company called Shapeways. I have a little Shapeways store, and it's you haven't seen Shapeways, you should go on their website. It's really kind of amazing. But designers put up their 3D models, digital sculpts, and you can order them through Shapeways.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
that's cool.
I have a couple of sculpts up there. One's a pair of shoes. The collector can go to Shapeways and, like, if they have the doll that these shoes fit, they can, just order them in the color that they want, or they can order them as a base and then cover them or paint them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And I intend to get a lot more up there. I only have a couple of things, I intend to get a lot up there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wasn't sure if you were saying that you do that and that's how you have your dolls or your doll parts printed, or if you were saying that anyone can come and purchase something that you made from there. So I'm happy that you clarified that. That is a really cool thing. I think Joey's doing it too. Joey Versaw might be doing that. There's somebody we interviewed who's talking about that. Mm-hmm. It might be Joey.
Okay. Yeah. And it's like, I want to get to the point, and, just time is what it is, but I want to be able to put dolls on Shapeways so that you can print, say, like, they make a doll body with, three different heads, and you can print out which head you want. You can paint it. You can, put in eyes, put the wig on, make it your own. So
nice. That's going to be really good. So how much stuff do you have up there already?
Yeah, just two things.
Just two things.
It's
time, right? Everything is time consuming sometimes, so
you think you're being shut in, you'd think I'd have more time, and I just don't.
Welcome to our world.
That is the truth. So we are definitely looking forward to what do you have coming up. We're so excited about that. See, that's just a terrible teaser right there, but it's okay. We will.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So you have to call me back.
We have to call you back, Robert.
He's playing hard to get. Okay.
Yeah, there you
okay.
go.
We have your number now. We know where you are. So I have really enjoyed this interview, and one of the things, so when Georgette and I started out, we were interviewing people who were doing interesting things in the doll world. That was our mission.
Mm-hmm.
And a few interviews in, it's like, wait a minute. No, these are entrepreneurs who do things with dolls. And that's what this show has been about. It's been interesting to hear your journey. But it's like, I am a person who makes dolls, and I make them this way and that way and this way and that way. And I'm taking advantage of all the new things that are coming. So this is going to be a really interesting show, not only for the people who are your fans of your dolls,
right,
but just for entrepreneurs. It's like, think outside the box. Is there another way that you can make this? Is there another form that you could use? This has really been a fantastic show. And you're a great entrepreneur. I mean, just it's like hearing your brain, thinking, oh, so I did this and I went over there and I don't know if you've thought about doing any entrepreneur classes, but
the journey
is great.
I hated the running of the business part, and that's why I always had people do that, but
mm-hmm.
I did like the strategizing about business.
Right.
That mm-hmm. sort of thing. And I think that, thank you. That's quite a compliment, but
yes.
You're welcome.
And business strategy, for doll designers, I think is important. Because I think when they do a doll, they think that on the creative side, I'm going to do this doll. But you have to think about, well, how am I going to market that? What's going to be the best route for me to go? Like you said, is it licensing? Can I do something that's different, put me in a different position as opposed to just making a doll? Can I collaborate with other people? I mean, those are strategies that I think that most people who set out just making a doll don't really think about that.
Here's a classic example of where I think this is, you know, this is always a rough place to start. When a person starts a company and they name the company the name of the doll, say like Betsy Boots or something like that. And what happens when Betsy Boots doesn't sell anymore? Does that mean the company has to go away? And if, you know, you have to look at the history. If it's how long does a doll line last? You know, historically, if you look at that, you know, Barbie has lasted, but she was such a game changer that anomaly in that whole world.
Right. They couldn't help but kind of have a great trajectory because she was like the first big thing coming out like that. So, yeah, but as far as like current designers or something like that, unless you can match that quality and that huge amount of manufacturing to a Barbie, how long is that doll going to be around, you know? Right.
And I don't think that Barbie has, I think that Mattel's name and Barbie's name have been around, but think about all the different versions of Barbie that have been around and how Mattel is really sharp about changing
strategies.
That those little kids that they recently released that are like non-gendered.
Yeah.
Right. Neutral. Yeah. Right. I mean,
that was really cool.
I think so. Yeah. They are sharp. They're on top of it.
Right.
So it's not just, so I would say that the Barbie line really, it hasn't lasted that long. It's been how they've been able to go in and bring in Christie or the sew-in style doll, or, you know, they just keep rolling out different lines within underneath that Mattel name and using Barbie as a character in there.
Right.
She's just one part of it.
But if you don't have people who help you with strategy, you know, then you do just become a one doll or one, you know, character kind of, company.
Yeah, you really can.
Totally. You have all of your children look the same.
Oh, my God. Can't tell one from another.
Who you? No. Yeah,
I but I no, you really. Roberts, baby.
You're Roberts, baby. No. But thank you so much, Robert. It's been a really, really great pleasure speaking with you and having you on In the Doll World.
Right,
it really has. It really has. And I'm so glad that we were able to connect with you, and we will definitely stay connected to you
because
we really want you to come back and talk about the newest things that you have coming out.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd really appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you, hon. All right.
Thank you.
You have a good day. Okay.
Thanks,
you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to In the Doll World. Me and Tammy really hope that you enjoyed the show. Please don't forget to share our podcast with other doll enthusiasts such as yourself. And if you would like to leave a message on how you enjoyed the show, or you want to suggest any guests that we should interview, as well as share information about what's happening in the doll community in your area, please know that you can reach out to us at georgette.inthedollworld@gmail.com and or tammy.inthedollworld@gmail.com. Also, if you want to see some of the photos we will be posting of our guests as well as the dolls that they talk about on the show, please visit www.inthedollworld.com. And until next week, add a little play into your life by collecting a doll, sharing a doll, or giving a doll a home. Until next week, thank you again for listening to In the Doll World.